These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
After that home run, and you touched home plate, I don't know if you heard this, but the fans were chanting MVP, and they did it a couple times today. Did you hear that?
I did.
What'd you think?
It's cool, you know. Obviously, I got to keep doing what I'm doing. But for me, it's whatever we can do to get the team wins and get us to the World Series to get that ring. That's the biggest goal for us.
Minute.
I just want you all to know
MVP.
As Declan taps his veins.
MVP.
And put a ring on it.
One of us on this show, like a week ago, tweeted out Byron Buxton, American League MVP.
Uh-huh.
You all laughed. All of you laughed.
That's not true.
Every last one of you.
No, that is revisionist history, sir. I did not laugh.
You sneered.
No, I did not.
You made
I said
fun.
We all.
Oh,
we,
it's just Mackie being a homer.
No, you know what? I never called you that for that because Byron Buxton, when he can play, if he wasn't hitting as well as he is right now, which is absolutely mashing the baseball. He is an MVP candidate, but we all come back to, and this still remains the question, seven games in, can he stay healthy? But he is an, if he can play in 140 games, and he will cool off eventually, he still makes such a big difference.
Look,
he's going to cool off at the plate. That doesn't mean he's going to go in the tank. But this is, I mean, how long did we wait for this? How long did we wait? And I don't care if it's 7 games, 10 games, 40 games. How long did we wait for this?
Well, in fairness to Buck, and by the way, welcome in. This is Mackie and Judd on the podcast feed today. You can also expect a deep dive, Judd's first ever viewing of one of the great sports movies of all time, Little Big League, a Minnesota treasure. We're going to do that deep dive. In 2017, Buxton gave us like a half season. He gave us 140 games,
mm-hmm.
and he gave us like a half season of really good offense. And his overall numbers at the end of the year offensively were still below average OPS, below average on base, etc. But he was also the best defender in maybe the entire league.
Yeah.
And so that season, he did get MVP votes.
Mm-hmm.
In a year in which he was still feeling out how to hit major league pitching, he had 16 homers, 29 stolen bases, batted .253, got on base with a .314 clip, and sprinkled in some doubles as well.
Mm-hmm.
This offensive version of Buxton is 10 times that we've seen in the first week, and we know is in there somewhere, right? We've seen it for stretches. This is 10 times the guy that got MVP votes in 2017. And so this is sometimes it just takes a long time, especially if your swing is raw. We talked to Royce about this on Rap with Royce. But I think what you're seeing here is not a fluke. I don't think this is just him being hot for a week. I think you're seeing a guy that's finally breaking into his 25-30 home run power and a guy that feels super comfortable facing major league pitching, maybe for the first time in like 6 years.
There's a bravado when he struts, and I do mean struts, to the plate now. He used to go to the plate bat dragging behind his back, looking like a sure out.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where I will trace this to, and to me, this is an interesting thing about how long this process can take, okay? I trace this to, and I don't want to give him too much credit here because I still don't agree with the move, but do you remember the spring training after he had been injured about 3 or 4 years ago on and off a lot? And they could have called him up. He went to Rochester, and they could have called him up when the rosters were expanded, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. They sent him home, and he was pissed, and he should have been pissed. And I still don't agree with that move. But that being said, he came to Fort Myers the next year and was basically like, I'm done listening to everybody and their brother tell me what to do. Torrey told me to have a leg kick. Judd told me not to. Phil said this. Declan said that. He used to listen to everything. Like, it would all be processing. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do this. And he showed up at that spring training and said, I'm done. I'm done with all the BS. And I have an approach. I worked on that approach, and that is me now at the plate. So subsequently after that, as far as his approach at the plate, it wasn't always fantastic, but it was definitely changed to a bleep you, this is what I'm going to at least do. And now the problems after that have been he's been hurt on and off. He's hurt. I'll go back to last summer in that truncated training camp when he somehow twisted his ankle and damn near broke it. And we're all like, what happened there? So coming full circle now. We are to a point where, and this is the biggest if that you could possibly have, if he can stay healthy, I do believe that there is no longer a flaw in his confidence or approach. I think this is 3 years of him saying, you sort of screwed me, and I'm done being the nice guy and the guy asking questions of myself. Because you could see, Phil, for how long the gears just churning. And I mean, this is independent of the injuries. I'm talking about his approach to baseball. You could see the gears churning on everything he did. And that's no way to play sports. So if this guy can now, for the most part, stay off the IL, I do think we are talking about the product of a player that we have been dreaming about in this town, as far as Byron Buxton goes, for 5 years, 4 years, 5 years, at least, if not more.
Yeah. By the way, our Talkin' Twins discussions every single day on Mackie and Judd, bonus deeper dives on Mondays as well. Our Talkin' Twins discussions presented in part by Dennis Kirk. We thank Dennis Kirk for being a supporter two baseball seasons in a row now of Mackie and Judd. And if you're someone who likes to get out, enjoy the baseball weather, if you like to get out and ride, whether you ride a Harley or a sport bike, whatever kind of ride you have, you'll find what you need at DennisKirk.com. 160,000 parts and accessories in stock, clothing and helmets as well. If you order by 8 p.m., you'll get it. They ship the same day. You'll probably get it tomorrow. Plus, shipping is free for orders over $89. Truly the best in the business. Just like Byron Buxton has become the best in the business. Move over, Mike Trout. DennisKirk.com. Everything you need for your ride at DennisKirk.com. So I know that they've had a couple just very bad taste in your mouth losses through the first week, but they are 5-2, and they're beating up on bad teams. I mean, they haven't played the Yankees yet. They haven't played the Astros, et cetera.
Sure.
But what I'm seeing so far just from Jose Berríos and some of these key figures, right, and Nelson Cruz doesn't look like there's been any sort of age rust at all in Byron Buxton. And Andrelton Simmons is already making little unflashy plays at shortstop that you don't even notice.
Don't sleep on that.
Turns, whatnot.
Don't sleep on that, Phil Mackey.
It's a big deal.
It's huge.
I've seen enough in seven games to say that this team is legit. This team has a really, really good chance to win a playoff game for the first time since 2004. And they're going to have some hiccups and they're going to go through some more injury issues. But I've seen enough in the first week to say, yep, all right, this team belongs in and around the contenders in the American League. Am I too quick to make that assessment? Or are you guys also drinking a little early season Twins Kool-Aid here?
I put them on 96 wins. So absolutely not. No, this is a 96 win team. Like, this is a really good baseball team. Your fear of the White Sox is not that the Twins are regressing. It's that the White Sox are and have improved. No, this is a good team. Look, the Simmons signing at shortstop to me is so key. The relay throw that guy made 2 days ago in Detroit, where he actually changed his positioning, realized that Diving Jake was going to miss the ball, but then he put himself. Jake. But then Simmons is the one that made that throw, and he's the one who repositioned himself to get the cutoff to make that throw. That stuff Polanco couldn't do. Okay.
Yeah.
So the Twins right now, as far as the infield goes, without JD playing yet, have a captain there, which they did not have. There was nobody previously, in my opinion, for the last 2 or 3 years, who was the captain of that infield. That guy is now there. The starting staff is stronger than it's been in a long time. Berríos is slotting in perfectly to where he needs to be, and his confidence is high. Buxton is being who he can be, which is fantastic. There are players I expect more from, and yes, it's, seven games, so it's a small sample size so far. I get that. But there's a reason why I thought this team could win 96 games. I think they are really damn good. And guess what, too? The bullpen's good. I mean, so far, the bullpen's good. So they're going to go through slumps, but I do not think that this is a team that in any way, shape, or form is going backward. I really like them. Dex?
Yeah, they're not going backwards. They're totally going forwards. They're in the exact right direction. I said 91, 92 wins. If this is the guy, if Byron Buxton's going to be this guy, the player that we've all thought he could be, this is an MVP player. And even on ESPN.com, they did our hottest takes after 1 week. And this was just published this morning. And this is from Bradford Doolittle. By the way, great name, Bradford Doolittle.
Bradford Doolittle.
And you just know that guy writes about baseball, by the way. Bradford
and
Doolittle.
And that guy parties.
And he parties.
You know that guy. You know that guy parties.
So his hottest take was, this will be the year of Byron Buxton. I hate to curse a guy with my total inability to connect on hot takes, but here it goes. Byron Buxton is going to win the AL MVP award. This is not an overreaction.
Hot Take Hops is recorded on location with the men and women of Sports Talk. All suspects are innocent until proven guilty in Hot Take Court.
Wow. I mean, honestly, we're pulling this guy over just to say congratulations for keeping it under the hot take speed limit, sir. You're a wonderful take artist. All right. Have a great day.
And for clearly
enjoy the rest of your weekend.
And for clearly listening to the Mackie and Judd podcast, too, because we were on this a week ago. He finishes up this blurb saying, this is not an overreaction based on three early home runs. I just love where Buxton's offensive approach is at. He's in that magical age 27 zone. And with a modicum with a newfound patience, he could hit 30 home runs. Yeah, this is an MVP guy. When he hit the bomb, because I was a couple beers in at that point at the Twins game yesterday, I almost stood up and I almost slapped the person next to me because I was in so much excitement.
Oh, no. Put your mask on, sir.
Oh, mask was on.
Put your mask on.
By the way, the mask police at Target Field will come at you if you don't have your mask on. I just want to let you know. It's the simplest thing. Just put it on your face, people. It's not hard.
And I get that you're outside, a lot of people have been vaccinated, but let's just, we're in the eighth inning of this thing, okay?
Yeah,
let's just
finish strong.
But the one problem, I will say this, going to sporting events, is this one, your ears. Back of my ears start to hurt.
Oh, I think that's...
What, from the mask?
Cold or?
No, from the mask, from the straps. Mm. The straps that...
You might need to get a different mask.
I need to get another mask, buddy.
New ears. My ears start to hurt. And I got big ears.
Oh, well.
I got the Dumbo ears, and they flop down.
This is a Zolgad problem. This is not a society
problem. It's not my problem. I got a big nose and big ears.
Yeah, I get it.
I got the big honker. I don't know.
I love you, but I think that's a Zolgad problem. I don't think
it is a Zolgad problem, but I'm saying that it starts to hurt.
But yeah, I'm all in, man. I think this Twins team's good. The White Sox still are coming, too, by the way. They're 4-4. Their offense is still humming. Their offense is just as good as I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. But it still looks to be the Twins division. Totally is.
Yeah. Judd, any other final thoughts here on this edition of Talkin' Twins before we talk Twins from 1994 and a 12-year-old manager?
I can't decide where Mitch Garver is at. I loved the approach yesterday, and I think that I'm not saying he's back to being the guy that he was 2 years ago at the plate, but I am saying I think that there is probably something in between the guy who scuffled and was hurt and struggled in 2020 and the guy from 2019 who won a silver slugger at catcher, which is off the charts. I don't think Garver by any means is a lost cause, and he's still got power, and I'm intrigued by what he can do bouncing back. I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, he looks comfort is another word. It's hard to tell like if that was just a pop-up fluke year in a year where the ball was juiced or if he's going to have a bounce back. And I would just add to Jose Berríos, obviously wasn't quite as lights out as he was in his first outing, but
he's good.
I think what I'm looking for with him is missing bats, attacking hitters. Berríos and old school Liriano from like 10 years ago oftentimes suffer from the same ailment as a great, you know, 4-3-4 pitch pitcher, which is just because someone squares you up or hits a ball to the gap or rips a single off of you or whatever doesn't mean that you have to now I got to try harder to miss bats. Like, you can throw your stuff over the plate as is. You're going to get hit sometimes, but don't let it deviate you from your strategy.
Especially
and I just want to see him just keep attacking. Yes.
Especially against bad teams. Oh, and my last thing. So the Twins are, I like them a lot. They're a good team. Okay. But if this was a Twins brunch, like let's say it's a Twins brunch. Okay. And you're like, what's on? What, you know, what do you have out for your brunch? And they're like, okay, we got a Simmons and we got a Buxton and a Berríos and a Cruz. And you're like, this sounds so good.
More cannibalism. The second time you know what I'm requesting? Cannibalism on the shows today.
Do you know what I'm requesting? What I really need? I need you to take the garlic off the platter and put a Kirilov on. That's my next thing. The Kyle garlic.
It's a Bloody Mary bar.
Okay, that's fine.
Like,
yeah.
There's too much garlic.
Make of it what you will, but I don't need the garlic. I mean, he got a single early, and then
he's
he
one
doubled.
Of the best hitters so far.
But then he struck out three consecutive times, and that's all fine. I don't care either way.
He worked his tail off in spring training.
I don't care either way, but what I'm telling you is you are not going to have, if I am the guy from the Michelin star system rating your restaurant, you ain't getting 5 stars until you put that damn Kirilloff on the plate.
Dude, he's 5-for-12, and he's batting Kirilloff. .417, and he's got 2 doubles.
Like, and he struck out 3 times yesterday, and I'm telling you that much like Victor Rask, they're coming for the Cinderella slipper, and it's going to be midnight for Kyle Garlick before long. Give me the damn Kirilloff.
Listen, I understand you guys want Kirilloff. I want Kirilloff too, but I don't think this is a zero sum. Kyle Garlick is a good player. Kyle Garlick was one of the best AAA players, at least with the bat,
Victor Rask has nice
in
stretches
2019.
Too.
Yeah.
Okay,
so.
And Dakota Dozier might have one good game on his resume.
Dude,
Cinderella
Kyle
comes
Garlick,
for the slipper.
Kyle Garlick has already played better in his sport than Dakota Dozier ever has in his sport. Okay,
I'm telling you. So. Look, you asked me what I wanted, okay? I hold teams to high standards here. Give me the damn Kirilloff and take the garlic off the table.
Thank you.
You know, speaking of high standards, by the way, Federated Insurance holds a high standard for the work they do with businesses in the state of Minnesota. They've been around for over 100 years. Your company ain't going to last that long and be at the top of the game if you don't have high standards. And so they have high standards for risk management, for protecting your business, and they measure the success of their business based on the success of your business. So find out more about Federated and the tools they provide and the resources and the list of industries that they protect at federatedinsurance.com or download the app. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. All right. Should we do this? Sports movie rewind number 2 for us. And I think this is Judd Zulgad's first ever experience with said movie.
It is.
So Declan, if you could roll this for us, let's rock and roll here with Sports Movie Rewind on that.
Billy, your grandfather owns the Minnesota Twins. There's no way Mr. Howell has that much money.
Why not? He could.
Think about it. If Mr. Howell was all that rich, what was he doing taking a cruise on the SS Minnow?
Now remember, guys, eat as many of these as you possibly can for the next 15 years. Because after that, can't eat anything that tastes good the rest of your life.
You should do it.
Yeah, right. Get real.
No, you get real. You'd be great.
You know how hard it is to manage?
It's the American League. They got the DH. How hard could it be?
That's good.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's good.
That was me.
You could lead the Twins to the pennant. Manager of the year.
Billy, serious, man. The Twins need you.
Welcome in to the second edition of Sports Movie Rewind here on Mackie and Judd. So this thing started over a year ago with Action Movie Rewind. We then brought Rom-Com Rewind into our stable. We will definitely get back to those genres as well. But public demand, the masses and masses of Mackie and Judd and Purple Daily listeners have been clamoring for us to review sports movies. And so last week, Judd's first ever viewing of Mighty Ducks. So you basically have never seen these classic 90s Minnesota sports themed movies.
Right.
Mighty Ducks and Little Big League from 1994.
Yeah, because when Mighty Ducks came out, I was like 21 or 22. And when Little Big League hit the screens, I was 24. And I had no desire to see what I perceived to be kids' films for sports. And I was really drunk at the time.
I feel like you're
the early
like
90s. I wasn't paying a lot of attention to these type of things.
You have an odd disassociation with kids' movies. Like once you get to a certain age, you just like can't watch a kids' movie. You're just out on kids' movies?
Not as much now, but then I was, yeah. In my early 20s, I wasn't going to go watch this stuff. Like now it's different. I'm older. I don't, you know. But yeah, I mean, I was doing things. I was going to work. I was going to bars. And then I was going to more bars. And then I was going to the liquor store once the bars, you know. I mean, so I was very busy. So yeah, I definitely had what you just said is totally fair to summarize probably my 20s and 30s. I did not
do like
it,
kid it would
films.
Be fun to go back and
you're
like
right.
comb through like 24-year-old
but
Judd's
Toy Story
schedule
now. Yeah, I mean, I was going out and doing things. But I mean, I definitely had at 24 a complete disassociation with what I perceived to be kids' films. And I've just never been a big moviegoer type of guy. I watch way more now, but yeah, that's a fair statement.
And Dex, have you've seen Little Big League before?
Oh, plenty
right?
of times.
Probably like eight
plenty
times.
Plenty of times. Okay. It's probably been, though, 15 years, 10 or 15 years since I've seen it last, but I've seen it plenty of times. Nice. So, yeah.
Well, the game has changed a lot since Little Big League came out, too, which we'll talk about. But, all right, here's the summary of Little Big League, 1994. When his grandfather dies, 12-year-old Billy Haywood suddenly becomes the heir to the Minnesota Twins baseball team. It's a dream come true for the baseball fan who believes he can get the Twins out of their current slump by managing them personally. Of course, managing a pro baseball team is a lot of work, and some of the players aren't crazy about taking orders from a preteen. But Billy's honest approach and love for the game could be just what the Twins need. 31% on Rotten Tomatoes, $20 million budget for this movie, turned into $12 million at the box office.
Yeah.
This movie did not make a lot of money.
Surprisingly, too, I think. They thought it was going to be a big hit, and it was not.
Also,
it screened really well.
We'll get to all of it. Like the cast was fairly loaded, and the cameos were loaded, and this was in the middle of like a great 5 to 10 year run of baseball movies. Right? You had these kids baseball movies, Rookie of the Year.
Yes, and that might be part of the problem.
So, some of the people who starred in this movie, Luke Edwards is Billy Haywood, and the Twins brought him back for the 20th and maybe 25th anniversary of this movie, and he like threw out the first pitch at one point. They had him in uniform with Ron Gardenhire in like 2014.
Did they really?
Sure. Maybe it was Paul Mahler. I can't remember.
I can't remember. It was something.
But they had him in a Twins uniform again. That was cool. Timothy Busfield, John Ashton from Beverly Hills Cop, starring in this movie.
Yep.
Dennis Farina is great for 10 minutes in this movie, and then he just gets fired. Classic Dennis Farina performance. Jason Robards, who's been in a million things for a long time. Jeff Garlin making an appearance as a Little League manager
early on.
From Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah.
He looks almost exactly the same.
The Dyna Baseball League.
Darker hair, but yes.
Yep. Jonathan Silverman, and then you had a couple noteworthy former and current players. So Leon Durham was on the Twins in this movie, and then Kevin Elster was an active major league player, and he was on the Twins team. Directed, by the way, by Andrew Scheinman, who never directed another movie. This was the only movie he ever directed, but he was a producer on Stand By Me, The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, Misery, three seasons of Seinfeld, and A Few Good Men. So his production credits leading up to this.
That's a great run. Good.
And then he parlayed those things into directing this movie and then never directed again. So if that says something about the work he did. So we'll start with and by the way, we'll get to the cameos in one of these categories. We'll start with Judd. Your key takeaway from Little Big League.
Love the cameos. Love the cameos. My key takeaway was this as a film where full disclosure, I had seen part of this not that long ago where he's in Chicago and stops by to play stickball with those kids on TV, but I quickly turned it. I want to say MLB Network shows this constantly now.
Yes. They do. Yeah.
But yet I did not sit and watch it. So my key takeaway was this. I thought this film would suck. I thought it was going to be really bad. I thought it was just going to be just really, really stupid. And while it does have huge plot holes, I actually enjoyed it.
Oh, like what?
I actually enjoyed it. My only complaint was I wish they had come to me at the time because I could have cleaned up the time. It's a 2-hour film that could have been, you could have easily made this 140 or something.
You probably didn't need two success montages.
Yeah, that's correct, exactly. Right? Two baseball montages, but I wouldn't cut them both out. I would have had just the one, though. But yes, that's exactly what I fixated on was you didn't really. I mean, this is 1994 by that time. Like, if this had been 87, I'd be like, more montages. Yeah, I can see that. Like, Rocky, right? Like, there's a third montage. Not surprising. But I'm with you that they could have cleaned up they could have cleared out the second montage. What I liked about it. And what makes this intriguing is the cast was full of a lot of people that could actually had played baseball and could play. But what I liked about it was the acting itself was actually not bad. Like the acting is not I thought that there were far more holes in the acting of Mighty Ducks and Estevez than there were in this. And I love the fact that Farina is great and he's not in it long, but like that could have, that part could have gone to a person that couldn't have acted, and it would have been brutal. Robards, the same thing, right? Yeah, like you could have like, given that to an old dotty guy and he would have just sucked, but he's great. So I thought that they did a really good job of mixing and matching people that could play baseball so that the scenes came off looking real with acting that was pretty strong. And I went from saying this is going to be 2 hours of just really, really patheticness to this isn't bad. I enjoyed it. And I did love the part. I did love the fact, and we'll touch on this more, that I felt the baseball itself, the scenes, were believable.
I have a major take on the baseball in this movie.
Okay.
That's sort of its own discussion later on. But Declan, what was your main takeaway from Little Big League?
Before I say my main takeaway, I just want to say on the Family Feud number one answer for Judd in any movie rewind is, I wish they would have come to me first. That is always a go-to in Judd Zolgad's movie reviews. And by the way, I agree with you. It's 2 hours. It's too long.
I can always cut your film down. It's your baby. You say perfection. I say let's go back to the cutting room floor and leave a chunk. 10-minute chunk on that floor.
I just have a deja vu every single Friday at like around 11 o'clock every time this happens because it's the same thing. My main takeaway is that this is every Minnesota kids like dream, right? Like every little leaguer that ever played baseball in Minnesota, this is their dream. I mean, this movie's made in 94. I was born in 92. Like imagine being an 8-year-old, you know, he's playing little league with his buddies. You're at that perfect little age where it's kids pitch and you're starting to really understand baseball a little more. And he's just an encyclopedia, right? Like he kind of reminds me of, I was the same way. Like I was just a little baseball encyclopedia. I wouldn't be able to go back to 1924. And like he was, that was a little over the top. That being said, I think it's every Minnesota kid's dream to be able to walk on the Metrodome with your two best friends and say, hey, my best buddy owns the Twins. You go to third, I'll go to first. And then you become the manager. You're managing the Twins. Like every kid has that idea of a lineup card. Obviously, we still do this as adults trying to, you know, basically pretend to be Rocco Baldelli behind the microphone. But my main takeaway is that this is every little kid's in Minnesota's dream, especially if you were born in the 80s and 90s and grew up with the Metrodome and the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah. So I'm going to get a little sappy with you guys. My main takeaway from this movie is that it just like really tugs at the heartstrings of if you're a kid and you have memories of going to games with your dad or your grandpa in this case. I love that this movie tugged at those heartstrings so much. Cause I remember like my parents got divorced when I was 6 or 7 years old. And so my dad, it was kind of my dad's mission when I would see him on the weekends and, you know, we didn't get to spend a ton of time together. And so he knew that I loved baseball and he loved baseball. And so that was our main shared connection. And just like that scene where Billy's grandpa, the owner of the Twins, is telling the mom, like, you got to let me take him to see Roger Clemens. When I was a kid, I had a chance to see Walter Johnson, the big train. And so my dad would always look at the schedule every single Twin season and sort of map out like, all right, so the Red Sox are in town here, which means we're on Roger Clemens' watch. And then we got to see Ken Griffey and Randy Johnson or Ricky Henderson's in town with the A's. And so he would like go through the schedule and get us those outfield tickets where you could just sit wherever you want and catch home run balls from Mark McGuire, Sosa, like all throughout the 90s. So I had a major connection to this movie when it was out. And I still feel like I have a major connection because one of my dad and I's biggest connections to this day, even when he's almost 80 years old, is baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So love that part of it. Joe, what was your favorite part of this movie?
This is not going to surprise either one of you when I say it. My favorite part of this film was that the guy that wrote this film had the team, the Twins in this case, lose the one-game playoff. That there was no championship.
Yeah. Classic Minnesota sports loss.
It is. Yes, one is that's true. But what I loved was every one of these films ends with a World Series championship, right? It always ends with that. And to come up with a plot line that ends with, hey, the kid did a great job. The team rallied around the kid. They got to a playoff. And of course, in Twins fashion, at that time, one game playoff, which means that it just goes to the streak. of the fact that Twins can't win playoff games. But I really like the fact that the writing in this film ended it at that point, because it still was a good film and it still was like, okay, cool. But yeah. you didn't get the old, it's a World Series championship. I thought that that was a really, really smart move as far as the script went.
It was kind of, I remember it being kind of shocking the first time I saw the movie. You just fully expected Lou Collins to hit a game-winning homer and everyone celebrates. And actually in the Wikipedia write-up, they have, you know, they go over how it wasn't like received very well, but that Roger Ebert praised this movie because of its lack of predictability, that so many things happen that are just sort of off script. Like, you expect movies like this to have a feel good win the World Series ending, like the Major League movies or Rookie of the Year, right?
Everything.
Just float it. And he strikes out the big bad hitter.
Yep.
And in this movie, it ends in failure. So yeah, 100%. Dex, what was your favorite part of this movie?
My favorite part is how they use so many prominent baseball players and they set it up with, I mean, this is the peak of the Mariners, right? I mean, this is Griffey and Randy Johnson, Lou Piniella. I mean, this is the heart of it. This is a little bit for A-Rod. And there's even other cameos by baseball players in this movie. And I know you mentioned there's a former St. Paul Saint, and I forget who's off the top. You said there's a former Minnesota, now like a Twins coach or whatnot, that was in this film that
Elster?
They used. Yeah, is that who it was?
Yes.
How they just Kevin basically knew that, all right, yeah, the Twins did win a World Series 3 or 4 years ago. But the production company knew that we're not going to include any Twins players in this film, but we're going to feature Griffey and Randy Johnson, and Paul O'Neill is in this movie.
Why wasn't Kirby Puckett in this movie?
Right.
My guess is because they probably would have had to have him commit to the whole film, right? Because he plays for the Twins. So they probably couldn't use guys that would have to be on the team constantly.
So my favorite part is the fact that they knew that who are the stars and who are the people to feature in baseball. And they just knew, do not talk about the 1995 Twins. Like, you know, the 92 team was still good, but this was in the ascension into some dark years of Twins territory. And they knew that, hey, let's just feature Ken Griffey Jr.
That's a good point. When did this film come out?
94.
But what day?
This is June 29th, 94.
So it came out as the strike was approaching.
Yep. So this movie was,
I'm sure I heard it.
This movie was filmed with the wild card being introduced for the first time, and Chris Berman even makes reference to, can't believe we're saying this, but they're playing for the wild card.
Yeah.
It was like this new concept.
But it's a one game. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. But I bet you that in retrospect now, the strike hurt because it probably remained in theaters into the strike, and people were checked out on baseball at that point. Thank God for steroids.
Because the strike was in August. Right?
August, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is like, but that was the talk of that year, which is the strike going to hit? And then it did, and they just shut down.
So maybe they thought, we'll release this movie right when so people are going to crave baseball. They're going to watch this movie, and people are like, this is baseball. Yeah. So the baseball cameo, since Dex brought it up here, I got a full list of all the players and managers and figures that were in this as themselves, or in one case, not as themselves. But so Ken Griffey Jr., who was pretty good, in terms of athlete appearances in the movie. Like, he had a couple lines that were pretty good. It was very realistic. Lou Piniella, Mickey Tettleton had a couple great lines in this movie.
Yes.
Also one of the weirdest batting stance guys.
That was above the head, right? He wrapped it above his head? No, it was back.
He laid it to the side. He would stand sort of facing the pitcher and laid it to the side.
Yep.
That was back when everyone had a homemade batting stance, and now everyone goes to the same camps, and it's all like mechanically honed.
Yeah, I miss those old stances.
Ivan Rodriguez with the Rangers, young, early Pudge,
young and not big yet.
Nope.
I don't know how he got so big later on.
Weird.
I would not speculate on such things.
Yep.
Man, was he
Sandy
young.
Alomar Jr., yep. Eric Anthony, Carlos Baerga, Alex Fernandez, Randy Johnson, Wally Joyner, Dave Magadan, Lenny Webster, former Twin, apparently was in this movie.
Yeah, I don't remember. I didn't know who he was.
Yeah. Let's see. Paul O'Neill,
yep.
Rafael Palmeiro,
yep.
Dean Palmer, Tim Raines, Chris Berman as himself, and then our friend John Gordon.
I love that.
Just a wonderful human being.
I got a production note on that one.
As Wally Holland.
I found a great production note about that. So that role was supposed to go to, and they brought, and I think he was with the Orioles at the time, John Miller in to read for it, and he was awful, and he was terrible, and they're like, oh boy, and he looked at them and said, John Gordon's your guy. He's and
oh, cool.
Miller told him, hire Gordon. He will be great at this role.
Wow.
And he sort of plays, but he sort of plays Gordo on steroids. Like, that's this role.
Right, yeah.
It's just him on steroids.
Wide.
Yeah. But yeah, but yeah. So he actually helped get John the role by saying, I'm not good, but this guy will be perfect.
Yeah, so I think like Judd's generation, Herb Carneal was the voice for you growing up with the twins. My generation, born in the 80s, Herb was in the mix throughout the 90s, but John Gordon was really the voice for my generation of Twins fans.
Same.
Yep. And now, obviously, Corey Provis has been doing it for like 9 years.
Yeah, I know.
It's been a long time for Provis, and he's awesome. All right, your least favorite thing about Little Big League, Judd.
Okay, so this kid, Billy appoints himself manager. He owns the team, but he's going to do it on summer vacation. I'm unclear. Like, dude, you're really rich. Your mom seems to care sometimes, but she's not like around all the time. Just drop out of bleeping school and go into baseball. And then the second part about the Billy character, and it's not the kid's fault because he was actually, I thought, pretty good. The second part about the character that bugged me, there's too much brooding. He broods too much. Like, he gets too into, I mean, he's in sixth grade. He starts off all fun. You know, baseball's fun, you guys, which is how a kid would act. I totally get that. So I bought in. But then, like, he, like, goes into these, oh, man, oh, I don't know about this. And then Lou Collins starts to date his mom, and he wants his mom to be happy. But then he gets mad and benches him about, like I didn't like the writing for Billy, because it's like, okay, I can clean this up in 1 second. First of all, just forget the whole school thing. Who gives a crap about that? And second of all, don't have him brood so much. He's in sixth grade. No sixth grader who gets that job is going to be like, oh, Lou Collins, you're benched because I don't know about this now. I got tired of how that character was written.
All right. So Judd has sort of hit on, I've got sort of tandem least favorite things here just to piggyback off Judd. And the number one least favorite thing for me is how quickly Billy abandons the fun mantra to just berate players all the time. Like, he goes from, all right, guys, we're going to have a ton of fun. That's all I care about. Just have fun. And they go on a 6-game winning streak. And then so basically, like, a week and a half after this fun mantra starts, he just becomes an a-hole.
He becomes incorrigible.
and forgets. And by the way, like, as he's an a-hole, the team wins enough games still to at least, like, have a chance the last 4 games of the season. So they went a huge chunk of the season with him being a terrible culture manager, just like Dennis Farina was. And yet they maintained the winning. And then the other least favorite thing for me is just, like, the mom wiping his face and the mom being so involved in suspending him for a game. It's like, mom, listen, all right, you just got to take a step back here. All right, you just got
her kid.
Sometimes you got to let Bill Haywood be Bill Haywood a little bit here, okay?
In real life, her kid was drafted, I think, last year, first round by the Mets. Center fielder. He's got 3 names. He's got her last name, and it must be his dad's. But yeah,
really?
He was a first round pick. He's really good. For the Mets.
Interesting. All right. Well,
life imitating art.
Make a sequel, right?
But I'm with you. Like the inconsistencies of that character. It's like you don't really need to do that with that character.
Totally. Dex?
My least favorite part, you guys kind of touched on it, is the mom. I can't stand the mom in this film. Number one, she just, okay, let me just get right with the parenting of this thing. So she's a single mom. She busts her butt. She lets her kids and her friends all hang out. Awesome. Cool mom. Like, it comes off as a really cool mom at the beginning of this film. And then all of a sudden, she starts, like, dating the player, which is a little weird, because now your son is the owner and manager of the team.
That's a good point.
And then, you know, he figures out that her son is watching, what I have written down, Nurses from Jersey. So he gets upset.
Night Nurses from Jersey. Poor man, porn on the road. I mean, what are you going to do?
You know, it's hotel. It pay-per-view. He's the owner of the team. Like, let him do what he wants. The mom guilt towards the end, I just can't stand. I didn't like the character of the mom at all. Did not like the character at the mall. By the way, her son in real life, the actress Ashley Crowe, her son's name is Pete Crowe Armstrong, 19th overall pick. By the Mets last year.
Pete Crowe Armstrong.
That sounds like a baseball
That's pretty
player.
Funny. What a random occurrence that is. Or maybe it's not random.
Least favorite part is the mom.
That's a good
far.
One, Dex.
By far.
That's really good, yeah.
Okay, what would this I'm movie could you have done this movie? Like, the mom has to be somewhat involved because he's a kid.
Right.
But, like, what's the bare minimum the mom could have been involved? Like, the mom, there's got to be a certain amount of, like, hey, he's still a 12-year-old, so he's going to get in trouble and stuff. But, like, did she really need to be dating and getting married to Lou Collins?
No.
Did Lou
Collins? I want to talk about that, too.
Lou Collins, by the way, like, all right, buddy, get your head in the game. This is a wild card play-in game.
That's in my notes, too.
And you're proposing during the game to the manager's mom? Like, what are you doing?
And she's in those dome seats above the dugout to the side. Like, that's a jaunt. Like, there was a camera pit there. You got to go. Like, he's going all the way over there during a game. I'm totally with you. I did not like that. I feel like Billy's character could have been written a little bit more consistently, and the mom didn't need that role. Like, she could have been in it without it being this big a deal that she is. It was almost like they got her and told her, okay, to play this role, we'll give you some substantial screen time. And I was like, really? No. Dex is right.
Yeah, it's bad.
All right, your least believable part of this movie.
Well, you hit on one, which was Lou Collins is really going to go and propose during a baseball game and a wild card game, no less, a one game. Like, this is when he's going to, like, go down there with a ring and then tells Billy, well, it's up to you if we get married. Okay, that's bad. But here's the least, for a Minnesota sports guy, here is the least believable part in this entire film, okay? And I'm sure to the country, they thought nothing of this. If you saw this film in Florida or Oklahoma or California, you thought zero of this. But this line from the Twins GM is the one that stood out to me as the least believable part, and it must have had to do with the ability to use team names. The Twins GM, at one point, is in his Metrodome office, which is like where the boxes were, like, very convenient. Like, there are these great suites that they've converted. And he's talking to the commissioner about Billy becoming manager of the Twins at 12. And you could tell the commissioner's like, that's a joke. We can't do that. And he talks about the publicity, you guys. And his exact quote was, it's June and people are already talking about Gophers football.
Yep.
This is 1994. I mean, now it's a stretch, but it's 1994, and they must have tried to get Vikings.
He meant it sarcastically too. I think, like, it was definitely a very provincial dig at a terrible Gopher football program.
But you would have. But I'm saying, my guess is that they tried to say Vikings and they couldn't use the name, and so I think they just came up with a team, and I think it was Gopher football.
Yeah,
but nonetheless, in Minnesota, saying anybody is ever talking about Gopher football in what's supposed to be a line to the commissioner is hilariously funny and as unbelievable as possible.
So, but, like, why wouldn't they have the ability? They're not using the NFL logo or the Vikings logo. Are they not allowed to mention Vikings in a movie?
Who knows? All I'm saying is it is completely the least believable thing that anyone in this state in August or October, much less June back then, would have been talking about Gopher football.
So actually, because you brought up sort of the structure of where the front office is, and it was like up in the suite
seats
level.
In the house.
In reality, their offices were like in the basement, the bow levels like no windows or anything. It was just
outside, right? Like above the third base side, they built them out, but they were not near the field.
Yeah. So I would say there's a few things here, but, like, the Twins clubhouse, all right, and this is very inside baseball.
Good,
I get that a lot of people have never been inside the Metrodome Twins clubhouse, and, like, at least Judd and I are fortunate enough to have been in there on a regular basis when the Metrodome was around. Declan, you probably were too young to be in the Twins clubhouse,
high
right?
School still.
That was, like, if they were to have built a luxury version of the Twins Metrodome clubhouse. It was not at all. The Twins clubhouse in the Metrodome was much smaller and just a total dump. Just a disaster.
Feels right.
And these guys are, like, hanging out in this state-of-the-art, super wide open catering area, right? Yep. They had a food area kind of in the back for the Twins clubhouse, but it was not nearly
And the nameplates were really nice. They were, like, electronic.
Like Target Field.
Yes. The Twins had, like, name sliding plates.
The Twins probably saw that movie and were like, what the hell? Wait a second. Yes. Why can't we get something like this?
You're 1,000% right. It's like a luxurious clubhouse.
Yep. Dex, what about least believable for you?
All right. I don't mean, I gotta be careful with how I say this. But my least believable part, I'm gonna speak on behalf of a lot of Twins fans here. My least believable part of this film is they make the poll ads look cool and like good people.
You can say that.
And all I'm saying is the owner, the grandfather, is this great, nice, nurtured man, and everyone loves him. And then he gives it to his son, and his son kind of like rejuvenates a little life. But then, you know, he also goes down a spiral. I'm just saying the Polad family, I don't think is portrayed in this movie accurately. Like, they don't call themselves the Polads in this film. But any
Jason Robards is Carl, though. Yeah, you're right.
Any Twins fan who watches this film would, or any non-baseball fan, like, oh wow, that's a really cool family that owns a baseball team. His grandson loves baseball, and he takes his grandson everywhere, and they're best friends. But let's be honest, even a lot of people can recognize, like, that's not how the poll ads operate. That is my least believable part.
I did love the taped message for after you die. Like, okay, if you guys were to leave a taped message for whoever it may be for after you die, if you have to tape it right now today.
Last will and testament, yeah.
Who would you, I mean, Judd would have to tape it for, like, Declan or something because he doesn't have kids. Yeah, maybe you tape it for Declan. But what would your message be? What message would you put in a taped for when I die VHS that you'd have to tape over a Bulls Knicks game for?
Which was hilarious too. Oh, I have no idea.
Would you warn people about something? Would you give someone something of yours like he did? Here, you can have the twins.
Well, yeah, because he's rich and he has to will that off. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, I have enough to will off other than like my house.
I would have to.
And Dawn would get that if she's still alive.
I would have to.
Assuming she's still alive.
I think I would just do a full video explaining to people the days before an electronic strike zone. Listen, you guys aren't going to believe what we did for over 100 years. We had these fat dudes like Joe West.
You would have robbed yourself?
And Angel Hernandez.
Of Laz Diaz behind the plate for the home opener yesterday? Is that what you're telling me? Laz Diaz? Missing balls and strikes?
God. Laz Diaz, man. This new Twitter account that's got like 30,000 followers, its umpire scorecard is amazing.
It's great.
Every game, every day, it shows you how right and wrong they were behind the plate.
It's just pretty awesome.
It's gonna bring electronic strike zones to the forefront. I will say that I was gonna put the genius hidden ball trick in the least believable, but I sort of think that, like, I know that didn't Judd, you told us a story, didn't like a college team pull that
college
off
World
one
Series
time in an actual game?
Yeah, College World Series, Miami and somebody in like 84. So here's the problem, and I found an oral history of this film, which was published like 5 or 10 years back. So the problem where it got screwed up in production was it's not a balk if the pitcher steps off and fakes the throw. But in the film, they cut out or didn't acknowledge, they didn't show the pitcher stepping off. So it looks like a balk. Mm-hmm. They should have seen it through and shown the guy, just for the sake of clarity, they should have shown the pitcher step off. But if you're off... You can fake the throw.
That's one of those things that 99.5% of people watching the movie would not even think twice about. They wouldn't think,
that's
a balk, right?
But I guess people who like baseball did. It's the first thing that occurred to me is that's a balk. And they're like, no, it wasn't, because technically he had stepped off the rubber. But you're right.
Is it unethical for them to have gotten the security guard to buy into it as well? I can see the team being in on the trick.
No, he works
cheating?
For the Twins. No.
Is it cheating?
It's a great... You know what? If it works, who cares?
St. Cloud State did a hidden ball trick against Winona in 2011, and it actually has 3 million views on YouTube. So what they did was the runner was trying to steal second, and the catcher actually threw to third, but they acted like it was a passed ball. And the Winona runner bit on it, and then by the time he gets the third base, because now he's coming around to third, they just tag me, he's out, and the Winona guy throws his helmet. It's a pretty good one. I think the hidden ball trick actually is more believable.
I will say that in a Legion tournament one time, Buffalo Legion team 2002, 2001, somewhere in there.
Yep.
So we pulled a successful hidden ball trick to end an inning one time. And the way we did it, so I was playing first base, and somehow we had like talked about doing this at some point, and it wasn't like just a spur of the moment thing. But when the time was right, you know, let's say there's a base hit and the hitter's on first base and rounds first base and the ball comes back into the infield. Whether it's the third baseman, the shortstop, or the first base. Well, I guess it has to be the first baseman if there's a guy on first. But you get the ball, and then instead of throwing it back to the pitcher, you walk the ball back to the pitcher, and you hold the ball in your hand, and you stick it in his – you make it look like you're sticking it in his glove. but you're really sticking it into your own glove.
Yep.
And then you go back to the base, and the pitcher just stays off the rubber.
Right.
And then the hitter sometimes will just wander off a step or two, even when the pitcher is off the rubber, and then you can just tag him out. And then you have to yell to the umpires like, hey! Tagging. It works on high school kids. I don't know if it'll work on a major league.
It's true.
But, well, yeah. But the key there is the guy on base has to be aware of where the pitcher is. Like, you've got to watch him. Unless he gets back on the rubber, you stay on the base. Like, that's the important thing. But the pitcher can't deceive the runner from the rubber, but as long as he stays off of it, the fielders can.
Where would the Ken Griffey Jr. game-winning, game-saving, like, advance to the playoffs catch rank in the history of baseball if that happened in an actual game?
Well, it depends on the game itself, but it is up there with the pocket catch against the plexiglass as far as, like, the equivalent to it.
100%. Yeah.
But if it's in a one-game playoff like that, I mean, it's fairly high. If it's a World Series, especially a decisive game, it's a, you know, great catch. But I like the fact that they paid him. Like the Griffey thing made the action believable, I thought.
Here's the one thing about that catch, and this is, you know, people don't think about this, but let's say that ball gets by Griffey. I mean, it's fan interference all day long. There's like 20 fans leaning over the wall to try and touch that baseball. And so that would just be the end of the game because it would have been fan interference, right? But wouldn't the batter just be out?
If you've got
20 fans leaning over the railing,
they lean
like
over
that?
There, yes. Yes.
Yeah, be tough. Can you guys tell me, I've got the 1994, the actual 1994 Major League Baseball standings up here.
Okay.
This is before the strike. So the strike hit in August. And so there was no World Series that year.
Expos were
so good.
Freaking Expos, got screwed.
So the Expos had the best record at the time, 74-40. They had a young Pedro Martinez.
Marquise Grissom, Delino DeShields. Oh, they were good.
Can you tell me what the Twins' record was? They played
by August before the strike hit.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't good.
So they had played 113 games by that point. How many wins did they have?
40.
I think it was,
they were. Oh, go ahead, Jed.
I think it might have been a few more than that, but yeah, they were not good.
They were decent. They were 53-60, so they were weren't good, but they weren't a train wreck.
Okay.
Let's play the lineup game here real quick. Can you guys collaborate together to tell me who the nine guys with the most plate appearances were offensively for the Twins? Like, who were their nine regular players
around
the diamond?
In 94?
94, yep.
Puckett
is correct.
Yeah, was Herbeck?
Puckett was so good that year. Puckett drove in 112 runs in 108 games.
Knobloch.
Just ridiculous. Knobloch.
Was Herbeck still around at that point?
We'll give you that one. Yeah, we'll give you that one.
Okay.
Was Shane Mack there?
Shane Mack played left field.
Look at me. I'm surprised I'm getting these.
Yeah, that's good.
There's a bunch of names. I mean, it's a weird era because it's kind of a transition era, but there's a bunch of names.
Denny Hocking was on that team.
Denny Hocking was on that team, but he only played 11 games, so he doesn't count here.
Okay. Was Gaetti gone?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he left as part of the collusion settlement in 90. Was Scotty Laius still around?
Scotty Laius was the third baseman.
Okay. Because he had moved from third to short when Gagne left, and then I think they moved him back to third base. Was Pat Mears on that team?
He was the starting shortstop.
Okay.
Six. Actually, there's 10 guys here, maybe even 11.
And was Puckett in right by then?
Yes.
So Puckett was in right. Mack
was in
left.
Shane Mack
was in left. Rich Becker on that club?
I had MLB 95 Genesis. And that's the only reason I'm trying to think of all these names.
Okay. So
we need a DH, a center fielder,
and we need a
catcher, and then a couple other prominent players.
Matt Walbeck around by then?
Yes. This is a clinic right now.
Come
on, you got this.
But wait. Center field, though, Dex. This is not, okay.
I mean, this is before my time, though.
So it was not.
On-base machine who stole a ton of bases.
Okay.
In 94?
Underappreciated in that era.
Okay, so was it a veteran type guy or a young guy?
He was 28 years old.
So sort of in between.
And I think he may have gone down to injury and then never.
I'm sure I know this one. I was just trying to think if it was one of the recycled guys that Terry brought through, but I think he started to do that later.
The DH is one of the greatest players of the 25-year era.
Paul Molitor? Is Molitor on the team yet? No.
Not yet.
Okay. No.
You're really close.
96. The DH was one of the greatest, like a longtime Twins player or somebody they brought in?
The majority of his career was not with the Twins.
I'm going to be really PO'd when I hear these names because I would.
DH, you're going to quit. You're going to quit media.
I went to games constantly at the time. 94, 1994 Twins DH.
Oh, Winfield. Dave Winfield. Okay. St. Paul Central. Yep. Let's go. Yep. Damn it. God.
Oh, that's when he got his 3,000th hit around that time. Damn it.
All right. I'm going to give you some of the other ones here. So Alex Cole was the center fielder.
I remember that. You know what? He was Juan Pierre before Juan Pierre.
Yeah. 375 on base percentage, 29 stolen bases.
Cleveland, right? He had been in Cleveland.
I believe
and
so.
And I think he wore rec specs.
I think that's correct.
I think he wore rec specs, yeah. I went to a lot of games.
Pedro Munoz and Jeff Rebele are also like the two main.
Oh, Jeff Rebele. In fact, Rebele had a friend who was a baseball player and an actor, and I forget which one, who he got him the job on this film.
Wow. The pitching staff, Kevin Tapany, Scott Erickson, Jim DeShays, Pat Mahomes, and Carlos Pulido made the most starts.
Carlos Pulido. And so Tapany and who else?
Scott Erickson.
And that's around the time.
Jim DeShays.
What year did Erickson pitch the no-no against the Brewers at the Metrodome?
Might have been that year.
It was around
that
time.
94. Yeah, yep. Or 93. And then the bullpen, Rick Aguilera with 23 saves, followed by the rest of the bullpen was a disaster. Carl Willis, Mark Guthrie, Mike Trombley, Larry Cassian.
They got old, yes.
7 ERA. It was really bad. So, all right, let's get to the
hole I wouldn't have gotten.
By the way, a Valley Fair shout out to Corkscrew, the Corkscrew, the Wave. Amateur mistake by them standing on the bridge for the Wave.
Rookie mistake.
You can't do that.
Rookie mistake.
Can't do that. Yeah. All right. We have two different categories here for ranking this movie. 1 through 10 scale. The believability of sports action. 1 through 10. So the only movie we've done so far here is Mighty Ducks. We gave it a 2.7 out of 10.
Yeah.
What would your 1 through 10 be here for Little Big League?
I'm going to give them a 9. They did a really good job. And the extras being actual ball players was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I'll give it a 9. They clearly worked very hard, if nothing else, to make the action in this film as believable as possible from watching people play. The scenarios might not have been consistently believable, but like you didn't see a guy who could barely throw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say it's a solid 8. I rewound it to rewatch it because and I know they're doing it because of like dramatic and for the scene, but the route Griffey takes to catch that ball, I don't know. It's a little zigzaggy and don't get me wrong. He was the best defensive center fielder in the game at the time.
Are you questioning?
But because of the filming, they were like obviously trying to hype it up. He's like at one point, it's like looks like he's running towards the gap. There's another point where it does not add up. It really like go back and rewatch it. Serious. Go back and rewatch
Mr. Serious.
It's an 8 out of 10 though. I think it's really believable. The baseball is and it does help having the actual players. 8 out of 10.
All right. So this is my take from the beginning. I teased it. This is I think. I'm giving it a 9. I can't think of a sports movie that's a 10 off the top of my head. I don't know if it exists, but this is the most believable sports action I've ever seen in a sports movie. Because they're using major league players for most of it. You don't have guys who just like look like they've never thrown a ball before. They're using major league players to do a lot of these scenes, and that's what made it so believable. So it's a 9, which means it's an 8.7 composite score between the three of us. And then the last one is 1 through 10 just on entertainment value. What's your score, Judd?
What did I give the Mighty Ducks?
You gave that a 6.
I don't remember what you gave it, but it was a 7 combined.
Yeah, you went 6. I did 7. Phil did 8. You did 6.
Entertainment value. I'm going to give this film, and keep in mind, I went in expecting it to be crappy. I'm going to give this film a 7. I enjoyed it. I could have cut it down by a little bit. I didn't enjoy all the characters, more so how they were written than acted. I'm going to give it a 7, though, because there wasn't a point where I thought to myself, I hope this ends soon because it's... And again, I will give...
I did.
Here's why I'll give them a ton of points. I'll give him a ton of points because not having seen this film, I thought, how are they going to get the World Series in? Like, we're getting late in this film. And the fact that they brought an abrupt end to it, I really enjoyed. So, a 7.
For me, it's a 6. It's a 6. It's way too long, dude. It's way too long. And the plot's all over the place with the grandfather. Not that it's his grandfather dying, but yeah, like they get the surge and then they go back down and then there's the playoff. It's way too long. I can't stand the mother. The family is not accurate. It's a 6.
I love how you want them to like paint the Polads as being these terrible
people. I'd
You'll never get the baseball team. That's not how this works.
You guys act like it was Gone with the Wind length. Like yeah. it was
no,
like
I didn't.
An intermission
I
in the middle.
I cut it down by 15 minutes.
I'll wear that. No, I'll wear
no,
that.
No, Declan hates yeah. the length. I'm just saying I could have cut it down.
I'll wear that.
All right. I love baseball. This hits every nostalgic heartstring for me. It's baseball. He's basically like the same age as I was. Like I was a couple years younger. It's the Twins. And I thought it was highly entertaining. It's a 9 for me in terms of entertainment value. This movie.
Somebody's gone too far.
And that makes it a 7.3 score, just slightly above Mighty Ducks at a 7.
Here's why I think, just to put a tie up a few loose ends here. Here's why I think the Vikings might have been an original intent to mention and weren't. Billy, for some unknown reason, in his bedroom has a Jets pennant.
Winnipeg?
New York Jets.
He also has a Lee County Stadium pennant.
Yes, but I mean, they've got a lot of Twin stuff that's cool. Accurate, too. Media guides, like clearly, and you know, I'm not surprised, the Twins were all in on this. But I'm saying, I think there was something up with the Vikings at the time. Because, like, why would you have a kid who lives, I think, in Edina and he's rich? Why would he have a Jets pennant? Like, of all the teams, it was almost like they're like, screw the Vikings. We'll give him a Jets pennant.
Yeah. One other shout out for this movie, using Runaround Sue as a montage song was clutch.
It's in my notes. I literally put Runaround Sue, great song.
Runaround Sue. Hey, how much did this film make you guys miss the Metrodome?
A little bit.
A little bit. Big game yeah. vibe. Love the big game vibe there.
Yeah, the
game 163 was a great way to close it out. But
why was the Twins dugout and bullpen on the wrong side?
It's true. They're flipped.
It was on the first base side in the film.
Logistics.
Yeah, man.
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a good question. Boys, I'm gonna pull an executive move here. It's draft season. Okay. It's NFL draft.
Oh,
season.
I've seen some of this.
Lil Costner
coming up, right?
We're doing draft day next week. Oh, we got to do draft.
Jennifer Garner.
Let's just do it. Let's put it out there. People can watch it with us, and then they can have a couple weeks to consume it before the draft.
We should try and do a series of just Costner sports films.
We would get 2 months out of it, right?
I mean, because the guy never, like, it's like, let's put him in another sports. I mean, he played Crash in Bull Durham, and then it was like from then on, let's just have him be in sports films.
Yeah. Love it. So draft day next week.
Last thing, I was... Actually, a friend of mine said she was listening to Chicks in the Office on Barstool Sports, and they were talking about bad sports rom-coms. I've never heard of this film before, but have you guys ever seen Summer Catch from 2001?
Freddie,
one of the worst films that's ever been made, but it's rom-com and baseball.
Yep.
And
we
it has
do it at some point.
Freddie Prinze, Jessica Biel, Fred Ward, Matthew Lillard, Brittany Murphy, like a lot of those great era of like
God
early 2000 actors. God rest her soul, indeed. I think we should add that to our rom-com list. I want to see how bad this film is.
I added it to the list here for sure. Quick shout out to PXG Minneapolis. Thank you for helping us power the Mackie and Judd Show. Golfers paradise at PXG, and the Gen 4 clubs have landed. So a lot of people with that golf itch this weekend because of the Masters. But drivers, fairways, hybrids, irons are PXG's flagship clubs. They've got great spring and summer apparel as well. PXG Minneapolis in Southdale Center. And find out more at pxg.com/Minneapolis. That's a wrap on Sports Movie Rewind and Mackie and Judd. We'll see you guys next week.
Hit a homer.
What?
Hit a homer and I say you can marry her. Hey, Lou?
Yeah?
You can marry her even if you don't hit a homer.
Thanks.
And Lou?
Yeah?
If Johnson gets ahead of you, watch for the slider. Going away.